Guide, which is a new ebook from Atlantic Books. He's also the religion columnist for the New York Times, been a past guest on the program. Mark, welcome back. Good to speak with you.
Thank you so much for having me, Hugh.
Now, you sent me this book, and I sat down, and I read it in an afternoon. And that doesn't happen very often. It's riveting. It's actually kind of horrifying. You have a serial sexual predator and a monk. And, well, just tell people who, let's begin with, who Ido Shimano is, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
I think it's Ido, but good enough. Ido Shimano came to, he's Japanese, he came to Hawaii in 1961 or 62. He was sponsored, he had a visa sponsor to come and be a student at the University of Hawaii and to teach Zen. They ran him out of town on a rail. I guess you can't take a rail from Hawaii to the mainland, so he took a Pan Am jet, landed in Manhattan New Year's Eve 1964. Set up the Zen Study Society, which became one of the most prestigious Zen Buddhist teaching centers in the country. If you were the who's who of Manhattan, of Park Avenue, when they want to learn Zen Buddhism, they go to him. This has been the case since the mid-1960s. However, meanwhile, some would say dozens of women he's been sleeping with. You go to him for teaching, you're 21, 22 years old, you have a trust fund, and within a year or two, he's saying that the path to enlightenment leads through sexual intercourse with him. So he's a serial predator, I call him. I think I well established that in my ebook.
Oh, you do. And there's no doubt in my mind he's a criminal, actually. And I used to say this about certain members of the Roman Catholic hierarchy in the United States, that they were hiding criminals. And I think people who are hiding him are enablers of him. And I think you've done a wonderful job exposing him. But it's much more difficult for, I think, Westerners to understand what's going on here because it is Zen Buddhism as opposed to Roman Catholicism. They don't understand how a master could be in a position of authority and abuse over their students. So I really would like you to start by, assume that, just the ordinary American out there has no experience with Zen other than having seen old dog-eared paperback of Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Right. Well, you have a very, very old Eastern philosophy, coming from the original teachings of the Buddha. In some of its forms, it moves into Tibet and goes into the Dalai Lama's form of Tibetan Buddhism. In Japan and Korea, it evolves into what's called Zen Buddhism. And then starting in the 19th century, but really not getting going until the mid-20th century, you have Westerners, mostly elite, white, intellectual, wealthy Westerners, becoming interested in Zen. And they think of it as a kind of peaceful, serene movement. Japanese Zen Buddhism is largely about meditation. So, and who doesn't like to, have a few moments of peace and quiet in the morning? So there's an obvious, there's something obviously likable about it for a lot of people. They find it more peaceful than going to a Roman Catholic mass, a little more serene than going to an evangelical megachurch. And their perception of these Zen teachers is that these are kindly Eastern spiritual masters. They wouldn't hurt a fly. So they see it as a way of peace. And that stereotype, unfortunately, has masked, I have said, more sexual abuse per capita than anything the Roman Catholic Church has seen.
And that is in the book. And the ebook, again, I've linked it over to HughHewitt.com, is The Zen Predator of the Upper East Side by Mark Oppenheimer. Mark, I was in Japan for the first time last February, and I went to Kyoto and spent a couple of days in Kyoto touring the temples, and then again in Tokyo and in various other cities, spent a lot of time with the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt visiting the holiest places of Japan. And there aren't many people practicing Zen there anymore. Is this a generally declining practice?
Absolutely. You've tapped into something really true, which is that if you go over to Tokyo or Kyoto right now and try to find someone who's interested in Zen Buddhism, you'll be looking pretty hard. It's a little bit stronger in parts of Korea, but basically the audience right now for Zen Buddhism is Americans, is Americans and Western European, again, college students, intellectual elite types. They see it as this kind of salvation from the Judeo-Christian, dominance. And so that's where people come. They come to the United States. So what happened was you had these Japanese masters in the 60s in particular who weren't getting students in Japan. But when they came to Hawaii or L.A. or San Francisco or Manhattan, they found that hundreds of people were flocking to them. So that's how it got started.
One of the things I also want you to explain briefly before we run out of time in our first segment, It's a lineal teaching. Now, I thought the analogy is people know in the NFL if you come from the Parcells tree or if you come from who ran the 49ers on the Walsh tree.
Walsh.
So, you know, you're in these trees, and I thought, oh, that's like Nakagawa and Yasutani. Yeah. They have these trees of teachers.
It's lineage, and that, you know, so back in Japan, where you're the person who gave you lineage, who kind of, you know, gave you the pass down, was 5 miles away. If you were turned out were a sexual abuser, he would come over from 5 miles away and kind of, you know, tell you to cut it out, or he would remove you. Here in the United States, you might have gotten lineage from someone back in Tokyo. So you're on your own. You've left town. Nobody's overseeing you. There's no archbishop of the church. There's no hierarchy that can rein you in. So when these people planted their communities here, if they were evil, there was no one to stop them.
Not only that, but as you articulate in The Zen Predator of the Upper East Side, there is a great deal of ambiguity in Zen as to whether or not intimacy with a student is even wrong.
So this is a real problem, which is there is a fundamental Buddhist teaching that you're not, it's translated differently, but, you know, sexual impropriety is wrong, something like that. But then the question is, well, what does that mean? Does that mean any sex outside of marriage? Well, some would say so. Does that mean any sex that's non-consensual? Some would say so. But you have people who interpret it to mean that as long as you're both, you know, consenting adults in the moment, anything goes. And so But what if one of you felt tremendous pressure from the guru? What if one of you was brainwashed? What if one of you felt that you had to give the sex or you'd be kicked out of the teaching program? There's all these areas that people don't want to discuss because the teaching is so vague. And say what you will about Judeo-Christianity, the teaching is not vague.
No, it's not. When we come back from break, we're going to talk about how this Edo Shimano moved from Hawaii to Manhattan, dug himself deep into Upper East Side society, and began what is a five-decade-long romp. Isn't that amazing? What a randy goat he is. We'll talk about that when we come back. My guest is Mark Oppenheimer. He is the religion columnist for the New York Times. You may remember he was with me on Super Bowl week last year talking about the cover story he wrote for Super Bowl for Sports Illustrated at the time. Great conversation then. The conversation continues right now. Terrible incident. But right now I'm talking with Mark Oppenheimer, who is the author of The Zen Predator of the Upper East Side. It's an e-book, just came out from Atlantic Books. Mark is also the religion editor for the religion columnist for the New York Times and a professor of journalism at Yale, where he joins me from today. Mark, when we went to break, I mentioned that on the front page of the LA Times website at this hour, there's a story, professor taken into custody in 1995 slaying of her alleged rapist. It's a very complicated story. I don't mean it to say it's connected with your book, but there is this look away effect immediately. Rape is one of those things, and sexual domination, and it's one of those stories that people want to look away from. It explains in part the Roman Catholic cover-up of their abusing priests. It explains how your monk could get away with it. It explains so much. And I'm wondering if people don't want to confront the Zen predator of the Upper East Side in the same way. People don't like to talk or look at these stories.
Well, you're right, and as you say, people don't like to look at it to begin with, and then when it's a Zen teacher, and I by the way, for this piece, you know, which people should go to Amazon and they should buy it because this is the only time you'll ever see me writing about doing Zen meditation myself. I went and I meditated with him, and he's 82 years old, and he was, I wouldn't say he was cooperative, but he was willing to, you know, sit with me. We did a two-hour meditation, and you can feel his charisma. I mean, the guy definitely has something, and that helped explain to me a lot of what, you know, it's just like the Catholic priest where they would say, but he was the kindliest man. He was the one who took my son under his wing and really helped raise, you know, people can't believe it. Well, when there's a kind of charisma, when they really do have this power of love, and then you discover that there's a snake in the garden, people really don't want to see that. And that includes some of the women who were in denial for many years about the harm they had suffered. And some of them spoke to me on the record for the very first time. And these were very painful conversations.
But, you know, what came away as an old fraud is the way in his conversation with you, he would begin to attack his critics as gay, as mentally unstable, as reprobates. It's a trial lawyer. I'm not a trial lawyer, and I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn last night, but I got some of the greatest trial lawyers as my partners. And they know these poker tells of serial liars. They always attack their critics.
Right, and it's a form of narcissism as well, right? You know those people who they themselves may not even think they're lying. It's just that because they know they're always in the right, the only way to square the circle is anyone who attacks them must be mentally unstable or themselves a liar or whatever. And that's what it's like to talk to him. I mean, every time I confronted him with someone who had given me on-the-record stories of his misdeeds, there was a reason. Well, that person's insane. That person was in a mental institution. That person's a homosexual. Again and again, it's always they're the ones who have the problem.
Mark Oppenheimer, how many people do you guess he either seduced or abused in the course of his 5 decades running the Zen Studies Society of the Upper East Side of New York?
I myself spoke to over a dozen, and we're talking about everything from sex that people who had sex that he pressured them into, or other sexual acts where they felt it was very, you know, real coercion, to people whom he groped and grabbed and then mocked them when they objected. So we're all a whole range of things, right? I spoke to over a dozen people in the know. One person said to me as many as 200. But the point is, he was compulsive and he has been at it for 50 years. So, you know, you can think about the math.
Okay, so he goes to Hawaii from Japan. He's befriended there by a very famous American Zen Buddhist, Robert Aitken, who'd been a POW and then converted to Japanese Zen and brought the teaching to Hawaii and wasn't having much success. And this student gets foisted on him, and he kicks him out of Hawaii. And this is where the chain of secrecy begins, which is why I want to pause on it for a moment. If Aitken had refused to write this guy a letter moving him on, he'd have been stopped then because he was abusing women in Hawaii.
Well, here's the amazing tragedy, right? So Bob Aitken issues him a visa, brings him over, almost immediately thinks, oh my God, what the heck have I done? This guy's seducing women left and right. Two of them have mental breakdowns, end up in an institution. Instead of calling him out, getting him shipped back to Japan, exposing him, telling the media, he basically covers it up because he doesn't want Zen Buddhism to look bad. I mean, this was a really weird tradition to most Americans, especially in the early 60s. So he writes him a letter, hooks him up with some people in New York, and refuses to tell anyone. And I have these notes where he sort of kept a private journal where he was tortured, but he basically thought the greater good was preserving Zen Buddhism's good name.
Now, he's a cover-up man. He is every bit the molester and assaulter of these women as the monk, because he enabled them. And that's part of the key message of the Zen predator of the Upper East Side. Stick around. One more segment with Mark Oppenheimer. Got my eye. Or, in fact, I'm spending one more segment with Mark Oppenheimer. He is the author of the brand new ebook, The Zen Predator of the Upper East Side. It's available at Amazon.com. I've linked it at HughHewitt.com. It's riveting for anyone who studies religion like I do and spends time on it, but it's also an introduction to Zen for many people and an introduction to various pathologies. Interesting discussion in brief in the book, Mark, about what makes a cult. And I've always thought you have to have coercion in physical or implied physical force to make up a cult. But I'm really of a divided mind after finishing The Zen Predator of the Upper East Side, whether or not these study centers run by Zen masters are cults, because 12 hours kneeling and getting hit on the back with a stick, that's weird.
It's not weird. Let me give you a different criterion. You said coercion, physical or mental. Let's talk about something that a lot of people say has to do with cult-like behavior, which is how much do they separate you from the other people in your life? You know, how much now, some of them,
yeah,
we know about these cults, right, where they say basically you have to cut off contact with your family, right? That's not what's going on here. But if it becomes such an obsession, and if they encourage it to be such an obsession, right, that you're spending every free moment there, that you're going away for these 3-month retreats, that basically you lose touch with anyone in your life who's not a Zen Buddhist, then at a certain point, you talk yourself into believing it's all good because you have nothing to go back to if you leave.
There are also within the Zen Predator of Upper East Side a couple of other stories. There are stories within stories. One is of Kevin Malone. Another is Robin Weston. We don't have time to do Sherry Shiat. We don't have time to do the Snow Leopards author. But I do want to talk a little bit about Kevin Malone and Robin Weston. First, Malone. This is a story within a story. This is the rise of Internet revenge.
Yeah, here's a guy, and by the way, he's legally changed his name to his Zen Buddhist Dharma name, Kubutsu, Kubutsu Malone. Here's an old, you know, kind of self-styled Irish tough, you know, chain smoker. He likes shooting. He's a gun nut, by the way. He's a Zen Buddhist gun nut. Edo Shimano, the Zen predator, seduces his then wife and keeps sleeping with him for a while after Kubutsu thought it had stopped. So he decides a few years later, after some other indignities from Shimano, well, I'm just going to take to the web and start posting everything I know. And people start leaking him documents, and all of a sudden, he basically has created this whole, you know, archive at ShimanoArchive.com about this guy's 50 years of pathology. And he's doing it while living on disability in rural Maine.
Yeah, what's interesting about Malone is that it shows this is the age in which a private grudge, and I think you demonstrate quite well that it's the slight, not the cuckolding,
right,
that drives him crazy. But if you get a grudge in the age of the internet and you have time and a Wi-Fi, you can pursue someone to the end of the world and drive the, I'm sure he has ruined any chance Shimano ever had of covering up, oh, the New York Times, it's a left-winger, he hates me. I mean, it's all out there. He did it. He did the work.
He did the work, and, you know, when he first called me and said he had some stuff on it, I didn't believe him because he sounded crazy. Because, you know, as a journalist, you know, Hugh, when you're in the public eye, you get these calls from people.
Yep.
And they always say, oh, I'm going to give you this stuff. I got some goods for you. And 99% of the time, it is some private grudge, but it's mostly in their head. And then I started looking into it. I thought, oh, my God, this is for real.
And then one of the victims, Robin Weston, and yeah, I've seen her name byline for
she's
years.
A writer.
She's a writer, and she's an ABC News person, and she's tough. But she got abused by this serial abuser.
She was involved with a different Zen master, and then she got involved with Shimano, and then one day Shimano gropes her. But to her credit, she stormed out, and she thought, well, hell, I'm a journalist. And she started making phone calls, because she figured, I'm not the only one. A guy who would pull what he just tried to pull must have done it a dozen times before. And she wrote this incredible story that was going to be published in the Village Voice, but they killed it at the last minute in 1982 at their lawyer's advice. So this could have ended in 1982 if the Village Voice had gone ahead with her story. I'm piggybacking on her.
And in fact, I thought to myself and made a note, if the Village Voice had done what they ought to have done, they might also have encouraged whistleblowers within the Catholic Church to blow the whistle then. This is, in fact, the essence of the reason I like the Zen Predator of the Upper East Side is it encourages people who know of wrongdoing of this sort in any context to step forward and shout, not to cooperate for fear of hurting the institution.
Well, you actually, as you and I both agree on this, you help, you know, truth and courage helps these institutions. The cover, it's always worse after 30 years of cover-up, right?
Yeah, well, it metastasizes. So what's
right.
The reaction been on the Upper East Side? This is where you live. You have gone and screwed around. I'm sure there are more than a few Buddhists running around the New York Times who are not happy with Mark Oppenheimer right now.
My email's filled with, there's some anger in there. I'm not going to let my kids read my email, the things they're saying about their dad. But, you know, what was also very interesting was the number of editors 6 months or a year ago in New York City who said no to this story. I mean, one reason it ended up being an online Amazon ebook is because a lot of editors just didn't believe that it could be true. They thought, oh, come on, not a Buddhist. And there was just tremendous skepticism inside the New York publishing community. So, you know, but it's there. It's in the record.
How is it doing? I'm curious. You know, ebooks are always interesting to every author. How's it doing?
I actually don't know. I know on the first day it sold a few hundred, but these things build slowly. And I'm obviously so grateful. I think it's important to get the word out, not just for my own bottom line, but because a lot of people still think Zen, that a Zen teacher could never hurt you.
No, absolutely. And if anyone you know is involved in Zen, it's a prophylactic. It is a useful thing to give them, if only as a warning. It is a look into a different world. And Mark Oppenheimer, congratulations. And to Atlantic Book, a hat tip. And I hope a lot of people go right now to HughHewitt.com and click on it, or go to Oppenheimer@Amazon.com. Thank you, Mark.
Hey, thank you, sir.
And I want to remind all my listeners, right now we're running our Feed the Children campaign, and between now and Thanksgiving, we would like to feed 20,000 children. Feed the Children has a button at HughHewitt.com. When you go and look up the Zen Predator, the